Chapter 7. Two things happened at the school during the weeks before I visited Jefferson in jail. The superintendent of schools made his annual visit, and we got our first load of wood for winter. We heard on Monday by Farrell Giroux, who had gotten the news from Henri Pichot, that the superintendent was going to visit us sometime during the week, but we didn't know what day or time. I told my students to take baths each morning and wear their best clothes to school. After the Pledge of Allegiance in the yard and the recitation of Bible verses inside the church, I would send a student back outside to look out for the superintendent. If the student saw a car, any car, turn off the highway down into the quarter, he or she was supposed to run inside and tell me. The superintendent didn't show up until Thursday. By then, we had had many false alarms. The minister of the church, who didn't live in the quarter, had made a couple of visits to church members. A doctor had come once, a midwife had visited a young woman twice, an insurance man had shown up, a bill collector from a furniture store had appeared, Henri Pichot had driven through the quarter at least once each day, and family and friends of people in the quarter had also visited. On Thursday, just before 2 o'clock, the boy I had watching for cars ran into the church.
"Another one, Mr. Wiggins, another one."
"All right," I said to the class. "Keep those books opened and look sharp." I passed my fingers over my shirt collar and checked the knot in my necktie. I felt my jacket to be sure both flaps were outside the pockets. I had 3 suits, navy blue, gray, and brown. I had on the blue one today. In the yard, I passed the tips of my shoes over the backs of my pant legs. Now I was ready to receive our guest. This time it was the superintendent. He stopped his car before the door of the church. A thick cloud of gray dust flew over the top of the car and down into the quarter. The superintendent was a short, fat man with a large red face and a double chin, and he needed all his energy to get out of the car. "Dr. Joseph," I said.
"Stifling," he said.
I thought it was a little cool myself, but I figured that anyone as heavy as he was must have felt stifled all the time. He wheezed his way across the shallow ditch that separated the road from the churchyard. He looked up at me, but I could tell he didn't remember my name, though he had visited the school once each year since I had been teaching there. "Grant Wiggins," I said.
"How are you, Higgins?"
"Wiggins, sir," I said. "I'm fine."
"Well, I'm not," he said. "All this running around, more schools to attend."
Dr. Joseph visited the colored schools once a year, the white schools probably twice, once each semester. There were a dozen schools in the parish to visit, if that many. "We're honored that you took this time for us, sir." He grunted and looked around the yard. There was a good breeze coming in from the direction of the cane fields, and it wavered the flag on the pole in the yard.
"Place looks about the same," Dr. Joseph said.
"Things change very slowly around here, Dr. Joseph," I said.
He said.
I motioned for him to precede me into the church. He needed all his strength to go up the 3 wooden steps, and as he entered the doorway, I heard Irene Cole, the 6th grade student in charge, call out to the class,
"Rise, shoulders back."
I followed Dr. Joseph down the aisle, and on either side of us, the students from primer through 6th grade stood as still and as straight as soldiers for inspection. I nodded toward my desk for Dr. Joseph to take my chair. He grunted, which meant thanks, and pulled the chair farther from the desk before he sat down. He needed the extra distance for comfort. Irene was watching me all the time, and when I nodded to her, she called out to the class,
"Seats,"
and the whole school sat as one. We had been rehearsing this morning and afternoon for the past 3 days. "Students, I'm sure you all know Dr. Joseph Morgan," I told them. "Dr. Joseph is our superintendent of schools here in St. Raphael Parish. He has taken time out of a very busy schedule to visit us for a few minutes. Please respond loudly, 'Thank you, Dr. Joseph,' which they did, loudly." Dr. Joseph acknowledged their greetings. "Dr. Joseph, we're at your service," I said, and sat down on one of the benches against the wall. Dr. Joseph leaned back in the chair, and still his large stomach nearly touched the edge of the table. He looked over the classes from one side of the aisle to the other, as though he were trying to catch someone doing something improper.
"Primer on your feet," he said.
They stood up, seven or eight of them. Dr. Joseph looked them over for a moment. Then he told the little girl at the end to come forward. She took a deep breath and looked at the girl standing beside her before coming up to the desk. She was afraid, but she came up quickly and stood before the table with her little arms tight to her sides. She would not look up.
"Nothing to be afraid of, child," Dr. Joseph said to her. "What is your name?"
"Gloria Herbert," she said.
"I can't hear you if you keep your head down," Dr. Joseph told her.
She looked up, timidly.
"Gloria Herbert."
"That's a pretty name," Dr. Joseph said. "Hold out your hands."
She must have thought she had said or done something wrong, because as she held her hands out across the table, palms up, I could see them trembling.
"Turn them over," Dr. Joseph told her.
She did.
"Uh-huh," he said. "Relax."
She did not know what he wanted her to do.
"Lower your arms, child," Dr. Joseph said.
She brought her arms back to her sides and lowered her eyes as well.
"Did you say your Bible verse this morning, Gloria?"
"Yes, sir, Dr. Joseph."
"Well, what did you say?"
he asked her.
"I said, 'Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want,' Dr. Joseph."
"Hmm," Dr. Joseph said. "Seems I've heard that one before. But you're a bright little girl. You tell your folks, Dr. Joseph said, they ought to be proud of you. Go back to your seat."
"Thank you, Dr. Joseph," she said,
bowing and turning away quickly. She smiled as she faced forward again, but no one else was smiling.